Now let's consider the hypothesis of purchasing power parity. The hypothesis is suggesting that, once converted to a common currency, national price levels should be roughly equal. So in other words, whether you take your money and spend it in the United States, or convert it to Canadian dollars or euros and spend it in other countries, you should be able to buy roughly the same bundle of goods, at least to the extent this hypothesis is true. There's a single good version of the purchasing power parity hypothesis, and more generally a price index version, which relates to the purchasing power of money in general. It's easiest to understand purchasing power parity when you look at a single item in isolation. So the magazine The Economist has developed what is called the Big Mac Index, where they try to measure the different prices of Big Macs in different countries around the world. Copyright considerations prevent us from reproducing this entire index, but I recommend that you go Google to it. One encouraging thing about the Big Mac Index is you see a fairly large cluster of countries where the price of a Big Mac, circa 2013, expressed in US dollars, is about $4. And this, of course, represents some evidence for the single good version of purchasing power parity. There are, however, a variety of exceptions. If you go to Norway, where the currency has been quite strong, a single Big Mac can cost you about $8, which is much more. I recall one of my trips to Norway, I was going to the equivalent of a 7-Eleven, and I bought a mid-sized bottle of plain water, and that cost me $6. If you go to India and buy their version of a Big Mac, well, that also violates this version of purchasing power parity, and it goes for about $2. In fact, a lot of different things in India can be much cheaper, and this is in part because India has much lower labor costs. If we think about the obstacles to purchasing power parity, they may include tariffs, also transportation costs, but this more general category of non-tariff barriers to trade, which can be anything from cultural differences to simply the problems in coordinating economic activity over different countries. One of the lessons of the literature on purchasing power parity is simply that these non-tariff barriers to trade seem to be stronger than we might have expected. In the short run, many of the deviations from purchasing power parity, they stem from the existence of flexible exchange rates. So in general, purchasing power parity is more likely to hold when exchange rates are fixed and stable over fairly long periods of time. But when you have flexible rates, what will happen is there will be some change in the nominal exchange rate, perhaps due to the changing value of that currency as an asset or due to changes in investor psychology. And that change in the nominal exchange rate will create a deviation in purchasing power parity across the two countries, and forces of arbitrage through markets will be relatively slow to adjust. And when we see these deviations from purchasing power parity, now being defined across entire price indices, what we find empirically is that the deviations from purchasing power parity appear to dampen out or be eliminated at the rate of about 15% a year, which is considered to be relatively slow. It also can be said, using the same data, that the half-life of a deviation from purchasing power parity is about 3 to 5 years. You can again think of these as measures as just how strong or how tough some of these non-tariff barriers to trade may be. In general, it's a big question in international economics, why are markets so slow to correct deviations from purchasing power parity? Sometimes sticky nominal wages and prices are cited, and indeed that is very much a factor. But it's also commonly believed that a lot of sticky wages and prices adjust within a time span of 2 to 3 years, if not less, and yet deviations from purchasing power parity appear to stretch over this much longer period of time. One reason for these deviations being so persistent is simply that non-tradables adjust very slowly in their relative prices across borders. So for instance, imagine that a Big Mac is costing you the equivalent of $8 in Norway and $2 in India. Well, it's not so simple to take that service, the Big Mac as it's cooked in India, and send it to Norway. For one thing, the food will go bad. Well, one thing you could do is you could switch where you will take your vacation. People will take fewer vacations in Norway and more vacations in India because India is cheaper. Nonetheless, this kind of adjustment takes a long period of time. So overall, how is purchasing power parity viewed as a theory of exchange rates? Well, people think of it as a useful long-term anchor. That is, an exchange rate cannot deviate too far from what the theory of purchasing power parity suggests. But when it comes to a lot of those short-run moves and twists and turns, and why the medium-term adjustment process is so slow, it's still not clear that purchasing power parity as a theory has really suggested the right answers. So some general lessons. The first is that in international economics, borders really, really matter. See also our video on the gravity equation for more on this. The second lesson is that adjustment to international shocks is very often quite inscrutable and difficult to understand. Finally, another lesson is that the long run can indeed take a long time to come about. To learn more, we suggest you Google to these articles, which are available online. And finally, we suggest these videos available elsewhere in the class on gravity equation, exchange rates being a random walk, and also on the work of Bela Balassa.